Welcome to Season 6 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
I'm so pumped that AllPlay is going to be sponsoring yet another Game Design Unboxed season. But what's even cooler than that, they're actually going to be joining me, as well as a bunch of other designers, going to Unpub, which is in Baltimore, Maryland, from March 27th through the 30th. I have talked about this convention many times over, and this is their main Unpub Festival, where all the designers from around the US, Canada, and also a few other countries show up, playtest games, network, and hopefully get to pitch some games to some cool publishers. So just to take a note, AllPlay will actually be there. And an even cooler note, they have had multiple games actually signed thanks to Unpub. Some games that you might know, such as River Valley Glassworks, Chomp, Oddland, Fiction, Things and Rings, and A Message from the Stars, all came from going to either Unpub Prime, otherwise now known as Festival, or the mini Unpubs at the different conventions throughout the year. Check them out, check out their games, and check out Unpub if you have time this year, or check it out next year. I'm a huge fan, as I've mentioned before in many episodes, but hey, let's jump into our first episode. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 111, Flora Street. Today, we are joined by designer Tam, who co-designed Monkey Palace, Crafting the Cosmos, and this Spotlight game. I'm super excited to have you on to kick off another season of my podcast. Thanks for being on the show, dude.
Hey, Danielle. Good morning, and thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, I mean, it felt right, especially since I had David a few episodes back talking about you. So it made sense to have the other half come on the show.
Yes, thank you. We discussed this, like who is going to go on which show, because David and I collaborate on a lot of games together. So we decided to do the split and conquer thing.
Perfect. Basically a game in itself, who gets which episode. Well, for anyone who doesn't know who you are, would you mind kind of talking about how you got into designing games?
I caught the bug very early in my life, and this was when I was in school in Malaysia. We had a class project when I was in grade 4 to design a game. With my mother's help, I came up with something, and I was very proud of it, and there was a contest, and I got second. So the bigger thing is I really loved designing games, and I went from games to I did a lot of puzzles, like mazes and stuff like that. And I unfortunately only had my family to play test back then, so I'm sure they were sick of my silly little games when I was young. But that carried me on to learning programming so that I can design digital games. And then I just did it through my adult life as well, but mostly to play with friends and family. And it was only recently, like maybe recently, 15 years ago recently, when I rediscovered board games and modern board games. And it was like, whoa, people are making board games and it really exists. It's something that I can do. It's been a lifelong journey for me, I guess.
That's so perfect. Yeah, I used to force my siblings into playing my board games or my random game that came from my head based off whatever television show we were watching at the time. I also think it's interesting that for anyone who doesn't know this game, Flora Street actually does have a digital element to it. So like mind talking about the game and how you play and how you kind of use those skills in creating it?
Certainly. Flora Street is a two-player game where rival Amsterdam flower shop owners compete to make the best floral showcase. The main thing is it runs a Dutch auction. We thought about how to do a Dutch auction. You know, there have been other games that does Dutch auctions, and some better and some not as good. And I thought, because of my background in digital technology, and I do design a lot of digital games for my work, so I said, why not reintroduce a mobile device as to run the Dutch auction? There was a lot of back and forth discussion early on about that, whether are people going to be okay with apps, because a lot of people perceive a phone to be a distraction when you're playing a board game. But we came to the conclusion that if it is done well, and because it's right, it's after the pandemic and people are already used to scanning menus and stuff, the QR code on their menu, and people are very comfortable with that, maybe it is a good time to reintroduce a phone app, but as a web app where you don't have anything to download, runs in a browser, and it'll give you an experience that would be very difficult to do without a digital device.
So for anyone who doesn't know what a Dutch auction is, could you explain the mechanic to them?
Oh, certainly. Dutch auction is a type of auction that is found in the Netherlands with their flower markets, where the price starts and reduces every few seconds. The person who bids gets whatever they're buying for the, in this case, flowers, lots of flowers at that price. So it's kind of like playing chicken, and we wanted to capture that experience. And one of the reasons that we did a two-player game as opposed to a three- or four-player game was because we wanted to have the chicken experience to be as intense as possible. We did try a four-player Dutch auction in the beginning, but we discovered that the two-player experience was superior. So we landed on only a two-player game for Floristry.
So what made you inspired to come up with the game Floristry in general?
So Greg May, who is also one of my business partners in our publishing company, he is a cafe owner for Hex & Co. and The Uncommons in New York City. He and I were talking, maybe this was in late 22. We were at this cafe, and he said that a lot of people come to his cafe, couples on dates, and they wanted to play a cute two-player game that is not, you know, that's not a long experience, something that they can do while they're chatting. So that got me thinking. And when David and I were on a road trip to a convention, we often design a lot of games in the car. It's a perfect place to do a game design, have a game design session. And this was in early 23, I believe. We're talking about Dutch auction game. David has an idea for a Dutch auction game. And it dawned on us that this was the game that we should try. A two-player game with Dutch auction. And of course, it's about flowers because it is a Dutch auction. And use an app to run the Dutch auction. So that was the genesis of Floristry. And it's pretty funny. We designed that game in the car. We stopped on the way at a Target or something, got some domino tiles. And when we got to the convention, we were ready for a playtest. We used a timer on our clock and we got our first playtest. And it's interesting to note that the game has pretty much stayed the same since that first design. We have tried different other scoring mechanics and other options, but we always reverted back to the core of that original game because it just worked. It was sometimes it just magic just happens.
Yeah, you guys do so much co-design in cars. I find it funny because I do similar, like I come up with ideas on airplanes a lot, especially 6 a.m. flights, because my brain is like kind of dead where I can only focus on a thing and I'm stuck without internet. So I just like draw or write stuff in my journal. I love when you two are in the car and just call and are like, hey, we came up with this thing. I was like, of course you did.
Yeah, I find having somebody to talk to, essentially iterate the design by having this discussion back and forth. And the design, you know, before you even put it down on paper or on the computer, you can run a few simulations, iterations, just verbally by talking it back and forth. And I find it to be really helpful.
You said that you went back and forth trying different kind of scoring mechanisms. What did you land on? And what were some of the things you tried to get to that point?
One of the biggest changes early tests was we wanted to try a four player because we realized actually David wanted to try a four player. I had my mind set on a two player version because of my initial discussion with Greg, but David wanted to try a four player. So, okay, let's try it. So we built an app. At that point, I think we already had an app. So we had a four player version of the game. What we found was that because there were potentially three other players, and you have to watch what the other players are doing to be as competitive as possible, much more difficult to do, and people just don't do it anymore. So we lost that competitiveness, a little bit of the competitiveness, when we went from two to four. And also for scoring, we had more complicated scoring, which was the attempt to make it more balanced, but found that for a game like this, simplicity is best. And sometimes, what is balance, right? A lot of times when people talk about balance, they're talking about fairness or perceived fairness. So as long as the game is perceived to be fair, it doesn't really matter that it's actually mathematically balanced, in my opinion.
Honestly, I tend to skew the way you're saying because so often people think something's unbalanced when it really is, but it's like the perception I think is more important because like in a engine building game, it's like sometimes cards that are expensive because that benefit's going to get generated, but you don't have money early game. Therefore, that card could be useless until the very end, but at that point, the engine that it's building isn't useful anymore. So I feel like breaking the math makes sense. And so it's always interesting to see when you're playtesting these games, what is the spreadsheet that is this mathematical problem that's perfect? And like, where do you break it so it's perceived or like works at different points in time in the game? Because like, I know when I playtested your guys' game, I immediately was like, I don't know if this works. Like, maybe we have too much money. But then it played out where like the scores are actually pretty close. And I think how you did your scoring mechanism helped with that.
Yeah, definitely you need to do both. You need to have the spreadsheets and do the mathematical analysis of it. And I'm not the best at it. In our partnership, David is much better at the mathematics of it. I think I'm a little bit better at the intuitiveness side of game design. And so you look at both, and when you feel right, when it feels right, that's when game is working well, regardless of what the math say sometimes.
And how did you guys pick how many flowers were going to be in the game? Was that the same from the beginning?
That just happens to be how many combinations of dominoes that we had, I think.
Nice. I love that so much.
Yeah. Also, the size of the grid. I think it was just pick a number and it works. So great. You don't need to change it anymore.
So funny when it works out that way. We had Mantis, that game, on this podcast. And I was like, why'd you decide like this many cards to start? Why did you decide three different types on the back and it's going to be one? And they're like, we just kind of picked it and it worked. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. And they tried some other things, but they're like, nope, it's perfect. Don't mess with it. Did you find that when you were, because I know this was a game that you guys were pitching, but then you ended up forming a company around it. So like, what made you switch from pitching to be like, you know what, maybe we should just make this?
Well, we started to pitch the game early on, and there was some interest in it. But also, I'd been with talks with Greg, because he has been a successful business owner, cafe owner, but he wanted to dabble a little bit and do board game publishing as well. And he had been looking at other people's pitches. And David and I had been talking about forming a company so that we can publish some of our own designs. So we started the initial discussion with David and Greg, and he really liked the concept of Floristry. It was a small enough game that it, for a new publisher, not too daunting of a task, because it's one of those things where being a publisher, it's almost good that you don't know what's all the things that are involved. I guess it's kind of like having a baby. Not that I have a baby, but it's better to kind of jump in head first without really knowing all the details. There's so much. We learned so much details about shipping and logistics, and it's a daunting process, but it is also a very challenging and fun process for me, because I love product design, and to be able to product design something from start to finish was very satisfying for me.
I feel like people can be either it's satisfying to be able to do all of it, and other people are like, oh God, like I've had this kid in my house. I need it out of here. I can't look at it anymore. That's so funny.
Yeah, I guess it goes back to my childhood designing board games, because even when I was young, this would be a game that I would just play with my cousin, and I would product design the hell out of it from, you know, like the box, the manuals, because I haven't played a lot of board games when I was young. I grew up in Burma, and we don't really have a lot of access to games. But I see pictures of board games in magazines. I look at what a board game could be like. And often I would design a game making up what I think the rules should be in this magazine ad in the game. I would design, hand draw all the cards and make the box and the rules and put my logo on it. That was an early hobby, which I still carry on, I guess.
And when you started working on this game and creating the app for it, when did you start bringing app you designed into the playtest versus just a timer on your phone?
I would say within the first week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The game was already working fine. We know that it's going to work. And the app itself is pretty straightforward, at least a timer app. Now, there's a lot of stuff that we built in behind the scenes over time. Now, because we had to figure out one of the barriers to entry from my point of view for apps is they have to be very reliable and it has to be very easy to get on the phone. So we didn't want to go through an app store where you have to have an account and download and, you know, all that stuff. Even if it's free, it's still a few more extra steps that we didn't want. So we opted for a web app. But if it's a web app, it needs to work when there's no internet. So we did that, but also how do you update that if there's a change? Like, so that was the bigger technical challenge. How do you push changes seamlessly to a web app that's on your home screen? And then we added like a how to play step-by-step tutorial. And my day job is I design exhibits for museums, and we use some of the foundations libraries that we built for that for easy content change. So right now we have a system where the Floristry app is localized in multiple languages. So depending on your phone, like if I'm in France, it'll load the French version. I have the text of each language in a spreadsheet, in a Google spreadsheet. So I have a French version, a Korean version, and so on. I have the step-by-step instructions, and I can publish it from my Google spreadsheet, and the update will go to the phone directly. So the next time you load it, if there's a change to, let's say we wanted to change the start button to say play now, we can do that very easily without changing it, anything in the app. So that framework took a lot of time.
That's so crazy. I had no idea. So if I end up going to Europe and decide to play your game, I should just know it's not going to be in English, depending on where I'm at.
You would have to change your phone setting to French, like the language.
Oh, perfect. Okay, that makes me happy. Good. Yeah. I mean, my French is, it's not the best.
Yeah.
I know pleasantries. That's about it.
I have like 6 language settings on my phone that I swap back and forth to test this. It's really funny.
Why did you decide to do that, I guess? Especially as a newer publisher, not everyone would think like, you know, let's make this in a bunch of languages just to start. I feel like normally you would gravitate towards, let's do the place that we're currently at and what language is spoken there.
Right. So Floristry is being distributed by Asmodee. They have a lot of partners across the world in different countries. So the first release of Floristry will be English for US and Canada. The next version coming out will be in several other countries, including French and Korea. And I think the latest we're talking about is China. So we do need that feature. And of course, we can go the simple route of just building a different app for each different language. But I like designing technology systems and platforms. And I wanted to do something that will be not only just useful for Floristry, but maybe for other of our future games and maybe other people's games as well. Like maybe another publisher might want to use the system that we have, which is called Step Up, for their own game, for their own web game. So that's future.
I remember when I play tested this with you guys, it was at Geekway to the West, and it was David. David was like, hey, Danielle, you go on dates. Can you play this? And I was like, excuse me?
I remember.
I was just like, wait, what? You're just calling me out like this? Okay. But it's like, was that part of the intention of the design, making this like two-player game versus trying to figure out how to make it for multiplayer?
Right. No, I've always wanted a two-player game because I like, in my mind, even though let's say a 4-player game supports 2 and maybe support 2 very well, there's a different calculus in your head. Like if I'm going to a cafe with a friend or whatever to play a game, if it's the 2 of us, I want to look for a 2-player game. I think that's what a lot of people feel as well. Initially, as I was saying, we went back and forth because David wanted a 4-player version and he felt like a 2-player only game was, why make it just a 2-player game when you can make equally as good 4-player game? I finally convinced him on the 2-player game somehow. It takes a while. We have a lot of arguments or debates back and forth. And that's part of our process. Sometimes he's right, sometimes I'm right. But through the discussion of it, the idea evolves. And that's the key point.
Do you remember some of your arguing points as to why you wanted 2-player?
For me, it was just a perception of what a 2-player game is. Because the original target in my mind was somebody going for a date at a cafe. I think they would be more likely to pick up a 2-player only game because it feels like it has made something specifically for them rather than something, you know, a 4-player game, which looks like the same. That's my argument. David's argument was a 4-player game, you know, why not make it, why not support 4 if using the same kind of components in the systems, and we can build, because one set of argument is that the more player count that you can support in a board game, the better the board game will do financially. And that is also true. So we have to balance, and we have to figure out what the important thing is in this game. And what it came down to in the end was that for Floristry, the way that it is now, the two-player experience is more interesting because you can actively watch what the other person is doing.
I know I've enjoyed, like, I recently played with Alex from Stonemaier Games, and him and I were just being jerks to each other. We kept, like, kind of moving our finger a little, like, we were gonna push it because we wanted to get the person to push it faster. Or sometimes we'd just be like, click it immediately because we're just like, no, you've had too many tiles back to back. Like, it became a little bit of a psych game, like, just dead eye on each other. And it's like, you're gonna click it? Which I think was very fun. And I like that at the end, it kind of walked you through like, hey, we're going to score this now versus this. Where like someone like me who plays a lot of games, I would just basically ignore that and be like, oh, we're going to total this up. All right, great. You won. And by you, I mean Alex, you beat me. I think that's really cool. I also like that your idea of it being kind of a cafe game is really cool because I have been going to a lot more board game cafes. And I do notice most people tend to go on like dates or just like them and their one friend. And trying to pick out what to play has always been like a little bit of a struggle. So like when I go to Night Moves Cafe that's in Boston, they actually have a section that's made for like explicitly two-player quick to learn games. There's just like a shelf of them. And those are the games that typically tend to get pulled first. And so I think that's like a cool design space to think about. And I also kind of like that in the cover of your game, it is like a plant shop, but it like does kind of give a little bit of a cafe vibe.
Yeah, and that was one of the things, like, it has to be easy to learn. So that was one of the things that we really struggled with and innovated on, I feel, is to make the game as easy to learn as possible. So if you open up Floristry, there is just one double-sided card with rules. So we tried to make the rules as undaunting as possible. So even now, for Up Games, our publishing company, our policy is, if the rules can fit on this card, it'll be an Up game. If not, then it's not. So yeah, we kept that easy to learn experience, and we're going to use that for future games as well.
Oh, that's so cool. So that's kind of become your thing if you fit it on this one sheet.
Yep. So that's one of the gauges. I mean, there may be in the future, who knows, like maybe we'll break that rule. But for right now, that is our gauge stick.
I think that's always interesting when you start up a company, what direction you want to go as far as the games. So would you mind kind of talking a little bit more about Up Games and also what the abbreviation is for?
So Up Games stands for Uncommons Publishing, but we just call it Up Games. But Uncommons Publishing, because that was Greg's first board game cafe in New York City. And that was also the board game cafe where I went to the most. And so much so that there's a photo of me on the wall when New York Times was there and they interviewed the cafe and took a photo. I was in the background being awkward.
Being a nerd.
Yes, exactly. So it's my claim to fame to be in New York Times was I'm on the wall of a board game cafe. Anyway, stands for Uncommons Publishing. And we started out with Greg May, David Gordon, and me to make games that are playable in cafes, because we decided to, you know, we have to pick a focus, and that was our focus. It's easy to learn. It has to fit on Greg's 2 feet by 2 feet table, so we couldn't make anything that's bigger than that. Some of these limitations that we set out for ourselves, it's kind of fun, and it also challenges us, and I think it gives a focus to the kind of games that our audience can expect. And later on, we met Ammon Anderson. He did Gnome Hollow. And we met him at Gamma, I think. And we became good friends. And he was initially doing some design work for Floristry. And then we decided to bring him on board as a partner. So now it's the four of us.
That's so cool. Yeah, I love the art that he did for the game. It's great.
Oh, yeah. And the new one for Scurry Up. He did a lot of the game board. The tree looks amazing. And I can't wait to show it to everybody.
I've seen it in person. It is great. It is very cute. How long do you think it took from your initial car ride of coming up with this game to it being out and published in the world?
So the game design itself moved very quickly. And as I was saying, we had initial interest with other publishers. But when we decided to self-publish it, that became a much complicated process. Now, we had to figure out how we're going to manufacture it. initially our thought was we're going to Kickstarter it, maybe print a couple of thousands if we're lucky for a Kickstarter. Because we really don't know. I know that Kickstarter can be very difficult. I explored it doing a Kickstarter when I was working on my very first game, Lair. And I did all the research for it, and I finally decided it's too much work for me as a solo person to do. So I went to the publisher for my first game. But now I have people that can help me between the two of us, David and me and Greg. Maybe we can Kickstarter it. But we were at Gamma, I think. This was right after Monkey Palace came out. It was a time when I started noticing that people actually know who you are. It allowed us to talk to people. And we were talking to some distributors casually. And they were like, why don't you, instead of doing a Kickstarter, why don't you find a distributor for it? And that avenue wasn't an option before. And I think partly because people are starting to know us and because of the success of Monkey Palace, that became an option. We talked to a few distributors, and we had already been working with Asmodee. Asmodee, as you know, is the group that published Monkey Palace, as well as Crafting the Cosmos, which is our upcoming game. So we already know people from Asmodee, and we had a discussion with the distribution team. It went very well, and we decided to go with Asmodee as a distribution partner. So, you know, but there was a lot of things that needs to be worked out, the actual process of it, us being newbies and all. And I think, you know, we started in 23, so now that it's coming out in 25, so it's like a 2-year process of designing the game, but it's more about forming the company and all the stuff that involved around designing the game.
Yeah, the founding a publishing company, the bringing the team together, getting that artwork done, finding the partnerships of where you're going to be distributing it. It's a lot. So I always said, like, I don't know if I'd ever want to own a company, but I like other people, like helping other people's companies succeed.
Yeah. And that's why I like collaborating with people, because, you know, each of us has our own strength.
No, I think that's a great team that you guys have assembled. I will say, though, you brought up earlier that this app, like one of the struggles of it is like, what happens if it doesn't work? Because I tried to bring this on a date and it didn't work. And I was like, oh, no, but you immediately fixed it. Was that a concern / is still going to be a concern for you guys, since you will be having this game in like a Barnes & Noble and some other places?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, it is a concern, but we are still kind of tweaking the code that handles the versioning. And there's a little small piece of wedge code that handles the versioning of the app, and there's the game app itself. Once that small piece of code is stable, we will have no problems. But we're making sure that that code is stable, and we're going to be releasing it in a couple of months now. So it'll be there. I mean, that part I don't have a concern about, but I would say it's a non-zero chance that something goes wrong. But I think that is very small.
Yeah. I think you've got it. I'm just always curious to see, like, with something like this, what could go wrong, what could go right? Because it's nice for, like, our listeners to hear, like, hey, there is still risk, even when things are looking like you're very successful.
Yeah, as anything, you have to balance the risk to the rewards. And I think because of my technical background and my interest in it, board games, I think mixed media board games and also board games that uses technology in some fashion, but still having that technical experience, I think that's where we're headed.
I also really, really love that you have two cat meeples in the game. They are so cute. I kind of would love the audience to know about both of these cats.
Both of these cats exist in real life. The white one is Parfait. She's 17 years old, and she has this perpetual scrawl on her face that she's always mad at me.
Yeah, got a mean mug.
But she's so sweet. I love her. And the other one is a new one, Tapioca. So yeah, they both exist. We decided to have cats as cute little score trackers. It wasn't necessary, but people love it. I love it.
Oh, I'm always pro cat. You know this. I got three.
Yeah, yeah. I have yet to meet your cats, Danielle. I see pictures of it all the time.
I have invited you over. You are actually driving distance from me. So come hang out, have Nova like sit on top of your lap. She was on here for most of the episode that while we were recording. She is my fidget toy. Oh my gosh. But no. Did you find that like through working on this, you had like a favorite moment and a least favorite moment?
I think the favorite moment was that initial design drive to this convention where we designed it, pick up the components on the way, play tested it, and it basically works. And I was like, wow, it was magic. I guess that's probably my most memorable moment. Least favorite moment. That's when, for me personally, having to talk about the logistics and all the various options of shipping from China to the US. My brain just goes numb and I tune out.
That's fair. It has nothing to do with the design, but I totally get it. That's like me with my day job. I'm just like, I do everything up until that point, and then I'm like, here you go. I got the game printed. You take it from here. I don't care what happens. I just want to know that it's out. It's like, oh, I do not enjoy logistics and the fulfillment and oh.
Yeah, there are so many acronyms. I still don't know what they all mean. But, you know, I have people like David and Greg who knows what they mean. So I can trust them.
Yeah, this is why I cannot understand how some publishers are like a one person army. I'm just like, I need other people to fill those gaps because my brain just cannot hold that much information. And if it does, it's going to start shooting other things out like people's birthdays and faces and names. And I'm already getting bad at that at this point. One of my last questions, I'd love to know if you have any advice in general to designers. You have a lot of games coming out. A lot of them are pretty big. I mean, you did the Lego game, you got Crafting the Cosmos, you got this one. So, I mean, prolific designer. Do you have any advice for people besides just trapping them in cars?
If you can't trap somebody in a car for 3 hours. So when I did my first design layer, and this was when I was reintroduced to board game and I decided to design a game that I'm going to publish. Because before I was designing games that I'm going to play with my friends and family. So that was this very different thing. So I had to study what that meant. And I played a lot of games. And I decided that, okay, I'm going to see what the process is like and how long it would take me if I'm just going to do this solo, just one game as a solo designer. And thought like, okay, maybe it'll take like 5-6 months. It wasn't a very complicated game. So 5 years later, I was still working on that game. So at that point, my good friends who are publishers said, all right, Tam, your game is done. I'm going to take it off your hands and publish it so that you can continue with other games. So they did that, and I'm very grateful for that. So, but what I learned from that process was designing just one game. First of all, you get too invested and involved in this one game, so it takes much longer. And you don't have that perspective of having a fresh look at a game if you're just designing one. So what I do now is the complete opposite. I'm probably working on 20, 30 games at a time and collaborating with different people. And I can go back and forth between the two. And you know, if I moved on to working on project B and then come back to project A a couple of weeks later, I almost have a fresh perspective on that game. I'm also very productive. I feel very productive because I'm working on very many projects at the same time. So I guess that's what I would recommend, because the initial instinct, at least for me, was to just see, work on one thing, give it all my focus. But sometimes I think that can be not as productive.
That's funny, because I'm also in the same camp of I work on a lot of games at one time and I bounce between, and it really does refresh things. Because sometimes I have to like check my notes and I'm like, I literally play tested this last week. What was I testing again? Because I've already been testing like 10 other things. It does kind of refresh stuff, which is nice. But it's also, I've noticed like on the other side is when you have too many things and they actually have deadlines, that's when it becomes more of a problem. But when you're casually designing, I enjoy it a lot.
And also, you mentioned note-taking. Note-taking is very important, especially if you're working on many things. You want to note the date, what you changed, who you play-tested with, and all that.
Yes, it is very, very helpful. And then, Tam, do you have any cool games that you can talk about that are coming out or signed that you're excited about?
Ooh, currently very excited about a game that we're in the process of signing. It is based on an IP of one of my very favorite books growing up. And that's all I can say at the moment, but I'm very excited about that.
Any other ones?
We have the game with you, Danielle, Push Push Penguin, which is coming out in a few months. It's by Wacky Wizards. And also we have Crafting the Cosmos, and that game looks gorgeous. Office Dog did a great job. And I'm looking forward to actually playing it with the final components. I've seen it at Essen, but I haven't actually played a full game yet, so I'm looking forward to that.
By the time this airs, actually, both those games may be out or about to be out. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but no, I've been really enjoying playing some Push Push Penguin. I played it at Level Up, and we were all cracking up because we played it at like 2 a.m., just me and a bunch of like YouTubers. So everyone was sassy. We all couldn't believe. I ended up getting chased away by the orca, and that was even funnier for everyone else.
Yeah, Push Push Penguin thematically resonated for me because for people who don't know, Push Push Penguin is a game where you're penguins going to the sea, but there's an orca in the sea, and the first penguin who goes into the water will get eaten. But so it's a second place win race. And brings back to my initial start of board gaming, where I was second place in this board game contest, but I felt like I won.
That's so funny. Yeah, no, I think that game's so funny. Granted, we did change the wording to say chased away, even though when I describe it, everyone looks at me, I'm like, yeah, it's Nom Nom Cookie, let's be honest here.
All those, yes, for the tender at heart 8-year-olds.
Yes, exactly. But it's funny because kids like that dark humor.
Oh,
like,
yeah. I mean, absolutely. Kids are monsters.
Kids are monsters. I mean, I'm not going to say no to that. There is some kids that I play tested that game with, and they're like, oh, yes. And they're like, I pushed dad into the orca. I was like, oh my God. Maniacal children. But no, I think that game is very cute, and I'm so excited for it to come out with like Wacky Wizard. And I'm also excited for down the line eventually you and I's Balls game to come out, because that one I talked about on my recap of the last season. So I'm pumped for that and enjoy working on games with you in general, but that one in particular, I'm like, ooh, Toyetic game. I love Toyetic games. They're so fun.
You'll be happy to know that I finally got my glass marbles, which I weighted correctly.
Yay! I am very happy about this. Oh my God. As my closing question, I would love to know if there was a game that you wish you had designed that you didn't design, which game would it have been?
Yeah, so I listened to your podcast. I was thinking about that for a while, and I was like torn between different things. And recently, I saw a new game that's on Kickstarter, and this is by Allplay. So Allplay, I know Joe Wiggins very well, and incidentally, initially I talked to Joe, who is the owner of Allplay, about Forestry and Dutch Auction and app, and he said that, oh yeah, we're working on a Dutch action game that has Dutch auction with an app. So okay. this is the game. So this is a remake of Canizio's game, Merchants of Andromeda. Now, I haven't played the game, I don't know anything about the game, but I saw the app, a video of the app, and it is amazing. They did the Dutch auction in a slightly different way, and it is a multiplayer Dutch auction, and when you it's when you release that triggers the action.
Instead of pushing it, yeah.
Right, exactly. So I was like, oh, why didn't I think of that? So it's just a little different UX experience. But for me, who is really passionate about UX experiences and apps, that's like, oh, it's one of those things. I wish I had thought of that.
Okay, so a game that's like not even technically out yet. All right.
Yeah.
This is the most unique answer to that question now.
Yeah, kudos to whoever came up with that. I'm going to have to talk to Joe about it.
And then I guess for everyone who's been listening to this episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 111, Floristry, we appreciate you listening. And Tam, thanks for coming on the show and joining me. For anyone trying to find you or Up Games, where can you be found online?
Sure. So my website and social media handle is Tam at Play. And I'm on Instagram, Facebook, X. And for Up Games, it's upgames@playat.com. That's our website. Also the same social media handles.
And I'm your host, Danielle Reynolds. If you're trying to find me on the social media, you can find me on Instagram, X, Blue Sky, under Token Gamer, and that's G-A-Y-M-E-R. And my website is dmrcreativegroup.com, which I really need to start updating again because I try to keep prototypes and games I have signed on there and the cool stuff I do. So definitely thank you so much for being on the show, Tam. This was super fun, and I look forward to seeing all these games come out, especially Crafting the Cosmos. I have not played that. I never play tested it either, so it's like one of the only games I'm like, oh, I actually don't know much about this.
Yeah, and thank you, Danielle. It was an absolute pleasure to talk to you on the air. And I look forward to hearing it and looking forward to seeing all the games that you are making. And congratulations on my favorite games of yours, which is Caution Signs. I love it. I know it's doing really well, and I'm so proud of you for that.
Aw, thanks. Yeah, that was a game that we played before Push Push Penguin that got us to 2 a.m. We played it from midnight to 2 a.m. It was tiring, but great. But no, this is awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, inspiration to publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out nodirectionpodcasts.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at letsallplay.com. Join us next time.